Okay, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 202. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
That's me.
We took last week off. It happens. We've done it many times. You should be used to it by now if you listen to us without warning. We'll tell you, hey, tune in next week, and then we just don't come back.
Could totally just happen.
I mean, sometimes we just disappear for like 2 years. So
that's why you should subscribe to our show so that it just shows up
in your feed. Yes, even if we disappear for like a long, long time, they'll just come back. I guess, you know, we could have done a show last week, but I honestly felt like there wasn't enough there. And we put together kind of a little special episode today.
Yeah.
By the time you're listening to this, you have probably seen Endgame, and you're probably like waiting for takes on that. We usually are about a week behind. So rest assured, we will have a review of Endgame next week from Chris at the very least. I don't think I'm going to get to see it.
It is a 3-hour movie in a genre you are not super hype about. So
I think the more that time goes on, and this will come up in our Perfectly Sane show tonight, it's like maybe it's not the genre I don't like. Maybe it's a very narrow part of that genre I don't like, which is like, which for me, you know, for movies, it would be, it's not that I don't like superhero movies, I guess. It's that I don't like the MCU. And, you know, if you're looking forward to our view on that, I mean, shit, you usually give them like, usually go see these movies and you tend to give them 3 stars. And
yeah,
I see them eventually, and I tend to give them 3 stars. So if you're wondering what we think, it's probably something like that. Yeah. Although, like, I did not like Infinity War at all. So
I did not either. So, and I think I came out a little more positive than you did on Captain Marvel. But, I mean, expect a slightly maybe more critical review.
Yeah.
Of Endgame next week.
I mean, it's getting, you know, really positive notices, like, you know, really good reviews. And I see a lot of people say, like, well, Infinity War was a slog, this one is really awesome. But again, it's like we've talked about this before. It's like every Marvel movie, you know, not just the fans, but the critics too, seem to really oversell them. So,
yeah.
We'll see. Again, I hate to, like, overly, like, pick on these films, but they're the biggest films out there, so you can take it.
I am glad that people are getting enjoyment out of films, even if they're not things that like 100% click with me. I mean, I do like superhero stuff and comic book stuff, but
yeah,
I don't know. I am happy that people like this, because in what, 6-8 months, I'm gonna be kind of bouncing off the walls about Star Wars. So,
It's like, I mean, dude, remember me last year? We were just dissecting Halloween trailers, so right. Everyone's got their thing. I guess to make sense of what I mentioned about Perfectly Sane Show, which is our video game podcast, you know, that's something that occurred to me about while I was playing Mortal Kombat. I'm like, maybe I actually like fighting games. I just don't like Street Fighter. Because, like, I fucking love these new Mortal Kombats. They're great.
That would be an interesting conversation. Yeah. I think I might be with you in some way on that.
I mean, all right. Yeah, that's a different podcast, so subscribe to that. But we're going to do a special episode tonight. We didn't announce it, you know, 2 weeks ago, but the running theme of this year is we're doing more franchise reviews, and especially when we hit these dead spots. There's been like a wide berth around the Avengers Endgame, so we came up with something here for this one, and we're going to revisit, and this is my pick this time, and it's one I actually had planned for this year. It just worked out that it just half of the series popped up on Netflix. So tonight we're going to review Final Destination 1, 2, and 3. They are all available to watch on Netflix. There are 2 other films in the series. There's a 4 and a 5 that we'll talk about at the end of this. We'll decide what we're going to do about that. But
yeah.
I mean, let's start with Final Destination. This film came out, let's see, March 17th. Of the year 2000. It was written and directed by James Wong with help from others. It had a budget of... Hold on.
Got some bad numbers.
Yeah, I had the entire series. So it had a budget. I was like, it had a budget of like hundreds of millions of dollars? No. And a budget of $23 million and a box office of 112. So it did pretty good, to say the least.
Yeah.
And yeah, to clarify, James Wong is the sole director on this one. A little bit of setup, a little bit of context for this film. This is, all right, let's explain what it is. The idea of Final Destination is these kids, they're going on a trip to Paris as like a French class. I think it's a French class, right?
Yes. Yes.
They're going, they're high school kids going on a trip to Paris. And our main character, played by Devon Sawa, he has like a premonition before takeoff, a very vivid like vision of the plane crashing like right after takeoff. He freaks out. Everyone gets kicked off the plane, or not everyone, but like a group of kids get kicked off the plane. Anyone who is basically standing in the aisle while he's flipping out. And as they're arguing in the terminal about not getting to go to Paris, the plane explodes. His premonition was right. And the idea behind this film and the films to follow is that, if you cheat death, it's going to come back for you. So that's like the idea behind this movie and kind of, spawned this series of five films. It comes out in the wake of the Scream era.
Yes.
And also eerily about a year and a half before 9/11.
Yeah.
I think that's important context.
Yes, because there are things that happen here that in the wake of 9/11, the way things are handled and the way airports even work now would seem foreign to.
I guess if you want to touch on any of that, we can. I'm trying to think of like what you're referring to. I don't know. But to me, it's important context for this reason. This film, the first film, the one that came out in 2000, it scared me away from flying for a decade. And it was this, and it like that really set it off. I remember flying, I think in the fall after it came out, and I was really, really scared. And then after 9/11 happened, I was just like, yeah, nope. Because it's just the most terrifying, like one of the most terrifying ways I can think of to die outside of being tortured or,
You have no control at all. Like you're not in control of the vehicle, and it's very hard to even see what is going on.
I think that's a huge part of it for me. Because, people say, hey, driving is way more dangerous, but like I don't feel scared when I'm driving because I'm in control. But I think there's another factor, which is, I'm afraid of heights, so you kind of lose perspective at that point. But it's like if a hole ripped in the side of the plane and people are flying out of it, then the fear of heights comes back. Like, okay, that's one way I don't want to die. Let's talk about the movie, though. And I think you and I talked about this a little bit beforehand. I think the first Final Destination, especially in the wake of like the Scream era, is pretty awesome little gem of that era. I think an under-celebrated gem. And no matter what you think about the film as a whole or the series as a whole, the opening of this film and the films that follow are fantastic, dude.
Yeah, the first 20 minutes. So as Jeff kind of explained about this one, like that premonition that happens, it's like a 15-20 minute sequence, like of everything lining up to their death in this dream. And then time kind of rewinds, they wake up and they're back at a certain moment during that time, but it's this elaborate fucking death scene that plays like you're just kind of flowing through the movie.
And yeah.
It is super well done. In at least these first three that we watched. I don't remember 4 and 5, but
I think those are pretty good too. I think at least the beginning.
4, I think, might have been like a NASCAR one. I do remember, yes, like the tire and shit. Like, that's some crazy stuff. But these kills they're elaborate. They're interesting. And it's all this gigantic set piece to get to that point.
One thing about it for me is the buildup before he even gets on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
It plays off the anxieties if you're afraid of flying, it plays off those anxieties. It knows the fears that you would have of flying. And I can give you a specific example. Like when he's going to step onto the plane, he looks down and looks at that little gap between. Like, I do that every time I'm stepping on a plane. I'm like, because I'm like, you are step. Like, what I'm thinking in my head, one is that once you step past this threshold, you're fucking fucked. But also, two, I'm like afraid of heights, so I'm looking down between that little crack that you step over. I'm like, oh my god, I'm like 30 feet in the air, and if this thing rolled a little bit back, I'd fall to my death.
Yes,
and it's just like, you know, whoever they had work on these movies knew had somebody who somebody who worked on this understood the fear of flying, because like that's one of those things. There's a whole fucking bunch of little things, and also there's like the idea, and that runs through all these films, and I think it's a really fun, clever idea. It's like that you have to pay attention to the signs in life. Like there's like all these little signs, like, you know, and they do that in the airport, like departure, terminal, you know, final destination, stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's something really brilliant about these films, because it's like, it could get you paranoid about fucking everyday life shit.
It's because there is no monster in these movies, right? Like, it is literally death itself chasing after you, but it's no personification of death. There's no guy in a giant black cape with a scythe chasing you. It's just this dread. It's this constant dread that is kind of chasing you, and oh shit, like somehow you escaped, you know, your destiny. So now to align the world back into you know, everything, to make everything right again, you need to die. Like, so it's like, you know, just weird shit that happens, but it's all kind of believable in like I mean, not believable in the way some of it happens, but all the deaths are, they can all be explained away as believable deaths, as like accidents.
Yeah, they're all accidents. They're all like, you know, sometimes very elaborate accidents.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I think that's, it's just so different. It's basically a slasher film, you know, but instead here, there's no Jason, there's no Freddy, there's no Michael. It's just death is coming for you.
There's a puzzle. There's a pattern, I guess, that like you can figure out.
And that's where I think that the series gets more and more goofy as it goes on, because it's trying to somehow spin a narrative out of this when I don't think you really need much behind that setup.
And I think as we get into 2 and 3, that's where some of my criticism, like this one just works.
Yeah.
Because there is no tie to a greater lore. There's no tie to continuity. It's just, this all happens, and it's these 5 or 6 people that are all there, and like just coincidentally, death knocks them off, like to make things right, as to align things back to the way they should be.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So like. So yeah. Yeah. After they get off this plane, they start to figure it out. They're piecing it together, and then like they make very big leaps of logic to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's like death has a design. Oh, okay. I don't know. Okay. But I mean, it is what it is. Like, I'm not saying that these movies are masterpieces, especially as it goes on, but it's just like, it's a fun, clever idea, and some of it is executed in a dumb fashion, but that's also fun. And I think in this first one, I think in this first, like, I think this is probably the best Final Destination, the original. I think a lot of that for me has to do with the opening and the fact that I'm terrified of flying because of this film.
Sure.
But I also feel like in this first one, like, they're setting the formula, but they haven't quite, like, they haven't quite figured out that the deaths should be really, really over the top and gory. Kind of more grounded here.
Like, this isn't, I mean, there's some, you know, gross stuff that happens, but it's never, like, there is gore for gore's sake in 2 and 3, I think.
And like, I think that, I really like that about 2 and 3, but I also think that, yeah, this is like the restrained, classy one of the Bucket Shumbles, you know what I mean? Like, this is like the Halloween one.
It definitely seems like it. I mean, it's an R-rated movie, so it's
there's kills. You know, I mean, there's some awesome kills.
But it's also, it seems like they are targeting a very certain demographic. I think if this film were made today, it would be a PG-13 movie. Just, you know, by the nature of how they make horror films now, this was reaching out to that crowd.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it does. It comes in the wake of Scream. It comes in the wake of a new modern horror, kind of understanding the tropes of the old guard, but doing it in a new way.
I think the reason I call this like the cream of the crop of the post Scream movies, because it does feel post Scream, but there's no like winking really. It's not like referencing all the horror movies.
Oh no, it takes itself. It takes itself seriously.
Seriously enough. I mean,
right. Like, it's playful, but yes.
It's not doing the thing that a lot of movies that followed Scream did, where every kid in the cast is a horror movie expert.
Right.
Because, you know, and the thing that's unrealistic about that, I love Scream, but, like, the thing that's unrealistic about that is, if you think about it, most of your friends, like, we are the horror nerds, at least for me in my life. Like, no, I'm the horror nerd. Yep. Most of my friends in real life don't like horror at all. Like, so, like, the fact that, you know, like, in Scream, everyone kind of, like, yeah, there was Randy. He was, like, the way more, like, total nerd about it. But everyone kind of knows the rules and this and that. I don't think that's realistic. And here, they just kind of feel like normal teens. Like, they're obviously, like, Hollywood teens, and probably in their 20s. Right.
They're all way better looking than they should be. Yeah. Like, like, they don't seem to have this, you know, overwhelming knowledge of all the things that are happening.
The movie is not super referential. It just feels like an early 2000s film, you know, just in general. Like, some of the music choices, you know, the look of it. On a similar topic, when I watch movies from this era, I sometimes wonder, like, what happened to the talent of this era? Like, they just, this is a good cast, dude. Devin Sawa, I think, is a good actor. What the fuck happened to him? What happened to Ali Larder? She's pretty good in this, you know?
She went on to do a few Resident Evil movies.
Yeah, I know all that, but, like, that's about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, I think she holds her own. I, like, you know, and she comes up again in the series. I'm like, she's fine. She's great. I'm actually like, oh, yeah, I miss this girl. Like, where's she been? Another example is Sean William Scott. Like, that guy, I thought he was going to be a big star. Like,
yeah, he got big for a small period of time. And then I don't know what the fuck happened.
To me, it feels like that era, kind of like late 90s to like 2005, like the up-and-coming talent, most of them fizzled. And I don't get why that is. Like, I would love to see some of these people come back.
If you want to get your Sean William Scott fix in,
he's doing those Goon movies.
He replaced the guy who was playing Riggs on the Lethal Weapon.
Oh, TV really? Series. Wow. Okay.
So you can get your fix there if you want to watch Lethal Weapon on TV.
You dropped off that series, right?
Yeah, I watched the first half of it, and it was all right.
Yeah, I heard it's out. Yeah, I heard it was pretty good, but yeah, it seems really kind of crazy to replace main, like one of the main two guys halfway through.
And I don't mean not to sidetrack too much, but so they brought Sean William Scott on to replace him, and then Damon Wayans, he plays Murtaugh. He's retiring from the show at the end of this year. So
I hated, you know, I would hate, like, I remember when, like, I'm trying to think of an example, like that 70s show, they replaced like the sister at some point, right? Mm-hmm. I think something like that. It just never works, I think. And it's your main character.
Yeah.
Like Game of Thrones, I just thought it just popped in my head. Game of Thrones got away with it with what's his name? Aquaman.
Oh yeah, Jason Momoa.
Wasn't he like the her boyfriend, Daenerys' boyfriend for a while? Yeah.
He died, like he was killed in the show.
Oh, I thought maybe I think it's someone else. Someone else, like I thought like he got replaced by another actor, but maybe it was just another character.
Was it the Mountain that was replaced?
No. I think I'm mixing whatever. We're going to talk about Game of Thrones at some point tonight,
too. We will get there.
I'm not a Game of Thrones expert like some people, so I probably messed something up there. Anyways, so back to this first Final Destination. It's you get these series of, like, really cool, like, what do they call them? Like, Rube Goldberg kind of, like, mousetrap type of shit.
Yeah.
It's like one thing setting off another. Again, I think most of them here are pretty tame in the first one. I do have one kind of nitpick. There's like one note I took while watching all three of these movies, Chris. So like the very first kill after they get off the plane is this dude. He's like in his bathroom.
I didn't like this one at all.
His toilet. I like the kill kind of. It seems almost plausible. It's like he like slips on some water and he catches his neck on like this kind of shower curtain rod line or something in his bathtub. I don't know whatever that line is, like some people have in their bathtubs, and it wraps around his neck and he accidentally hangs himself in the bathtub because he had spilled some like conditioner or some shit on the bottom of the tub and he was slipping on that so he couldn't get a grip, which I don't know, like, dude, just grab the side of the tub and pull yourself up.
Right, like stop like flailing around.
Yes, but I could kind of like buy it.
Yeah.
Here's my complaint, Chris. At the end of all of this, he's dead. The water slowly seeps.
Yeah.
Like, pulls back.
That's where it's a little goofy for me.
You thought of that too? I'm like,
yeah.
It never occurred to me. I've seen this movie at least five times, and it never occurred to me how goofy that is. It's like, dude, you're death. You don't have to cover up your crime. Like, if someone has an accident and they die, all the evidence is still there. Like,
it's just an accident.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to blame Alex for it. Like,
and I don't think like any other Doctor in the series does that. As I mean, because this was like the first kill, and I was really like, what the fuck? Why did they do that? And yeah, I never noticed it again.
They do some other weird stuff, like where people take pictures and like they get blurred out or something.
Well, that's kind of different. That's like the looking for the signs type thing, and we'll talk about that because that gets introduced late. But I thought that was goofy. Let's try to touch on some other things that I liked or didn't like about it. Like, I love the Sean William Scott's kill. The whole sequence is pretty good.
Yeah, just it kind of comes out of nowhere too. It's like,
oh god, it's great. Like, you could feel it now, but back in the day, like, I remember seeing this movie in the theater. It got kind of reaction from people. And that's the one where they like get stuck on the train tracks and they all get out. And he's yelling at the dude because the dude was being a fucking idiot. Kerr Smith.
Yeah.
He's yelling, Sean William Scott's yelling at him. And as he's yelling, the train like picks up some piece of metal from the dude's car, I think.
Yep.
Fucking, it goes flying and just decapitates him.
Slices right through his neck.
I don't know about you, but for me, that was like my favorite one of the first one.
I love the elaborate nature of the teacher. Like, she like dies by fire and knives, and like it's kind of crazy. Yeah. But I kind of like love the like elaborate long play of that where, you know, like her cup is cracked and
they do so many like false alarms or whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just like, oh, that's gonna be the thing. And like it's not like there's a great one in two where like this guy's whole kitchen goes up and nothing gets him. He gets out, I'm so lucky, and the ladder goes into his
fire. Yeah.
Again, it's just it's a formula. These movies are definitely a formula, but to me, it's always kind of tickled me, and it's fun. And I think this is kind of like the best one of the series because it doesn't have any of the baggage of being a sequel.
Yeah, it feels original. It doesn't have like the need to tie into anything else, which I think is where like 2 and 3 start to falter a little bit.
Yeah, I'll semi-agree. I mean, we're going to get into it in a second, but I'll let you speak any other pieces you have on part one. I don't think I have one final thing I want to say, and it kind of applies to all of them, but I'll let you, if there's anything else you wanted to fill in that you feel like I'm skipping over or something.
I do think like the ending is a bit weird.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Cause that's what I wanted to talk about.
It's like, oh, we've escaped and months have gone by. And like,
how do you know you've escaped?
Right. Like that's the thing. It's like, why would you assume that? Like, why wouldn't you assume death would keep coming for you? Even if you were to avoid it a second time, like
even if you were following by rules that you made up because you thought like, oh yeah, it's doing this and this and that. It's like, you don't know anything for sure.
Right. So, and nothing in the rules that you're making up like dictate that, hey, if we do it a second time, death gives us a free pass and we're good.
Like, and so that's the last thing I want to talk about. And it touches on, for me, the fatal flaw of the series, which is like, while it's such a clever idea that death is coming to get you, there's no way to end these movies. There's literally no way to end them.
No, they just keep going on and on.
Yeah, you know, like they just pick an arbitrary point where the teens won, quote unquote, and then we go to 6 months later. Like that's what things all do because,
yep.
Like we just said, there's no way to know you've beat death. Like, guess what? You haven't beat death. I haven't beat death. Nobody's beat death. Like, it's coming for you no matter what.
And I think the, like, aside from like the, you know, that piece of it, which I do think is a bit goofy, I think if they had just ended it, you know, with the Kurt Smith's character getting like taken out by that sign, and then kind of this feeling that, oh shit, like Ali Larter and Devon Sawa, they're fucked. Like, and then if they did a second one, it starts fresh. Like, there doesn't need to be a tie. And that,
yes! Thank you. I was thinking about that, too. I'm like, you don't... All this thing is a formula. And, you know, it's just... It's a very clever setup to kill a bunch of people, right? Yeah. There doesn't have... And because you don't have a Jason or anything like that, like, there doesn't have to be any connection.
No.
So, all right. Let's... I mean, we've gone pretty long on the first one here, so let's just... Give a score for Final Destination 1, and we'll get into the rest of the other two.
Yeah, so I after rewatching it, like I ended up really liking it. I think the soundtrack's great, which we really didn't touch on. Great, like, you know, thematic score that
the really score
small notes.
Like, I fucking love this score. It's ominous as fuck. It yes. really makes the beginning really effective, in my opinion.
So, like, I'm going to give it a 4. Like, I came out, like, yes, this movie is 20 years old, and in some ways it feels that way, but it still works really, really well.
I'm going to come down with a 4 as well. Again, I think this is, like, one of the special horror movies of that era, and it's a lot of fun. It's corny. You know, there's a point where Tony Todd comes in with a cameo, and that's when it lets you know that this is supposed to be fun. It's really over-the-top corny
yes.
scene, but it's letting you know, hey, have some fun, and it's fun. And kind of moving, you know, segueing into the rest of the series, I think 2 and 3 are a lot of fun. In some ways, they're like lesser films, I think, but again, they're carrying the baggage of just being a sequel. Like, you fall into this formula, and now you're just going to do it again.
But they all kind of follow that model of having this awesome, elaborate set piece to start off. And I really like 2's intro. Like, much like you were, like, you know, with the plane, like, I don't get nervous or scared while driving, but like, that's always a fear, is like, you know, a major accident that you have no control over.
Yeah, it's funny. All right, so Final Destination 2, its opening kill or whatever, you know, its setup is the thing I'm least afraid of, right? But I will say this, when I used to have panic attacks, I would get really anxious on the highway. And I would, like, it would be like, I'd be driving along, and then all of a sudden I would think about, hey, we're all going like 100 miles an hour, and if anyone fucks up, like, we're all fucked, right?
Like, one person.
Once you think about that, it freaks you out. Like, or it can. I guess some people don't give a shit, right? Like, some people drive like maniacs. But yeah, when I used to get panic attacks, that would trigger it. Like, I would think about it. That would trigger it. I actually pull over to the side on the shoulder and get out and have a cigarette and just kind of pace back and forth until it went away. But I say all this to say that while it's like the thing that scares me the least out of like the three setups here, it is probably the best opening of the three. Like, it's so elaborate. Yeah. It's so elaborate. It's so gruesome. It's so much fun. There's things that have never left my mind. Like the water bottle getting caught underneath the brake pedal. Yep. I think anytime I have like a water bottle, like sitting on a front seat or something, to this day, I'll be like, the water bottle under the gas pedal. Like, I just always think about that.
Like, you're all like, ever since then, been super careful about anything that may fall down into like that pedal area. I think another thing that 2 does really well is it immediately fucks with your expectations of
what
you know, in Final Destination, the first one, like, the people that get off the plane are the ones that are saved, and like,
everyone gets fucking slaughtered.
And it's like, so like, and here, like, everyone's getting killed, but you still kind of feel like, when she's flipping out, the cop is there, feel, all right, like, what's going to happen is, like, she's going to save her friends, and that's how this is, it's going to kind of play out, same formula. And there's just this fucking graphic, this truck slams into her car, and her three friends that are in the car.
Yeah, you think they're the main characters, yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck just happened? And then you realize that it's these other people that, you know, you were getting glimpses of dying as well, that it's these other people in these other cars that don't have any relationship to each other that all are going to be the main characters here.
Yeah, I really dug that too. I noticed that too. I was like, oh, they really, like, you know, they inverted your expectations, or, you know, subverted them. But another thing about, like, just a couple things about, like, that opening crash sequence, like, the cop dude, he gets the fucking the lumber or whatever right through his fucking car, and he just explodes into fucking red, like,
yeah, it's
shit.
Like red, you know, watery dust.
This entire series, or at least 2 and 3, like, from that on, like, there's so many awesome deaths where it's like a bag of blood exploding.
Yeah.
And like, I forgot about this series, because the first one is so restrained, and it's the one I've seen the most.
Yeah, these become gory really quickly, and they are not afraid of like throwing bags of like red mist around everywhere.
Yeah, and I like, again, there's things, we'll get into the things I think that kind of hold this one back a little bit, but there's things about Final Destination 2, I think, that will make it the favorite for a lot of people in the series. And for me, it's kind of like it's a very close second. It's goofier. It's not as actually like scary and eerie as I felt in the first one. But boy, oh boy, that they just embrace the goofy side of the series. And then they just fucking turn that dial on the gore all the way up. I think this has the goriest deaths in the series. They're all a lot of fun. So that, for me, that's like the positives of this. I don't know how you felt about.
Yeah, no,
I was throughout the three of them,
but. Pretty much right on board with that. Yeah, like the deaths are more elaborate, and they are far more gory and gruesome. And as you said in the, you know, when we're talking about Final Destination 1, there's like these scenes and these part of these elaborate set pieces that you like bust, much like the intro, like mess with your expectations. Where like the fire with the guy and he's cooking,
it's so good. It's so
he
good.
Gets
it's one of the best in the whole series,
and it's like the entire time you're like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And then he escapes, and you're like, all right, well, maybe he, like, you know, maybe he found a way to skip out, and yeah. He gets impaled by the fire escape ladder. It just comes down and goes right through his head.
Yeah, that was one I remembered going into this. Yeah, I just think this one's a lot of fun. As far as, like, I think the things where it like falls short from part one. One, I think this. I don't ask where this cast has gone because I don't know any of these fucking people, other than Allie Larder, who returns as like the person that they figured out has been through this before, and she like somehow knows all the rules. Again, the whole like we know all the rules. Like nobody knows all the rules, dude. There's no fucking book on this shit. Like, but yeah, like. I don't know about you, but like, has any of the people here, have they like gone on to be bigger stars? I didn't recognize any of them.
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't recognize the names of any of these people.
The score is done, like, so the score for Final Destination is done by Shirley Walker, and she did all of the first three of these films. I don't know if she does the whole series. We'll maybe find out. But for me, I felt like they didn't use it as much here. Like the like that
yeah.
like she didn't use it as much. And I really like it was such a mood builder in the original Final Destination that I kind of missed that a little bit here. And then we've kind of touched on this, but like the whole like somehow trying to tie it to the first one. I don't even remember how they tied it because as soon as they like. Trying to explain it, I turned my brain off because I said, this is stupid. Why do you don't need this?
So they weirdly tied in each of the characters, all had some sort of interaction with people from the first film. So like one of them was in Paris at the time where you know the sign hit.
So it's like a butterfly effect.
Yeah, it's like you were around these people that had cheated death, and in such a way, you were then somehow marked. It's like that doesn't make sense. Like it actually goes against like the kind of the premise of the original. I don't like how like the you know, how they tried to make it like all connected thing.
Well, yeah, I guess. I'm kind of torn because, like, I like the idea of a ripple effect, and then so, like, we're doing a movie about the people that were in the ripple effect, but
sure.
But also, the handling of that information feels clunky. Like, it's just like it feels very much like now I have to do the exposition, and this is how this connects to the first one.
Yeah,
the way it was handled, it was so poorly that like. I would rather have it just be like the same idea as part one, but you know, here's a new cast. Cause that's all you have to do with these. It doesn't have to. The core idea is good enough and it's such a fun excuse to do some really fun stuff that it doesn't matter. Like you could stumble. And I think they do stumble here trying to tie it together.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of my take on two. I like the upping of the gore factor, and I like how it just knows it's silly as fuck now. You know.
Yeah, and I think some of the kills are really cool. I think they do rush a little bit towards the end. Like they start trying to kill people off like very quickly, because they spent so much time trying to give us the exposition that even though they have a larger cast, I think here, that they have to kill, it's like, oh, well, we wasted too much time getting to this point. So now we're going to try and like off them all very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. All right. But well,
still liked it.
I just wanted to touch on a few facts about the film. I forgot to say at the top. This is the only one not directed by James Wong, at least out of the first three. It's directed by David R. Ellis. Screenplay by J. Mackey Gruber and Eric Bress. So, I don't know. And this one came out in January 31st of 2003. Budget of 26, did a box office of 90. So, it, you know, it was another success. Not as big as the first one, but...
by horror standards, pretty good.
I mean, yeah, you know, any movie you do for, like, where you get, like, 3-4 times the budget back, it's a success. So, you know, it kind of cemented it as a series. Like I said, like, for a lot of people, I think Final Destination 2 is the peak. For me, it's still the first one. I'm going to come in at a 4 on this one also because, again, I think that it really found its groove here and the gore is just a lot of fun. So.
Yeah. I'm going to come in a little bit lower. I'm going to give it a 3. I think that, like, it's still inventive. The kills are great. They're fun. I think it's just tied down a little bit by that need to tie everything together that doesn't necessarily work for me.
I would agree with your point there, but I just couldn't rate it. I to me it's like it's on par with the original for different reasons. Then we get to part three, which I remember when it came out, that's when I was like, oh, this series getting tired and this one was lame, and you know, I think part of it, like the first time I saw it, I was like, this doesn't connect as well as the others. Like, it feels apart.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe we could try to figure out why that is. But anyways, a few facts about Final Destination 3 before I get to mention them. Once again, directed by James Wong, written by James Wong, along with Glenn Morgan. It came out February 2nd, 2006. Oh, I'm sorry. That was early premiere, February 10th, 2006. Budget of $25 million and box office bumped back up to $117 million. So I think that's kind of a sign that, like, you know, people were digging this as a series.
Yeah.
Because I don't think this is better than two, but it made a little more money. And
I'd have to look back and think, like, how was, like, 2005, 2006, 2007 for horror? But, like, thinking it might have been a bit of a dry spell, and this is
a little bit. You had some of those, the Platinum Dunes movies, probably. Okay. But it may have been, like, because I remember, like, what, Texas Chainsaw was probably, like, 2004. Might have been a little gap there, but.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I think here's part of what it was, Chris, is that, like, horror was changing. You know, it was becoming those super grim, dark, really, you know, torture porn was kind of in.
Yeah, like in fact, the second Texas Chainsaw movie in that kind of, like, that newfound approach came out in 2006 as well. Yeah, I think it was. It was at the start of that kind of, like. Like very
Saw,
yes. Hostile,
yeah. Which, you know, I think that whole era kind of gets more flack than it should. I think some of it's very strong, but sure. this kind of, like I said, this series kind of feels like a post Scream type deal. Starts to feel a little out of place in this era. So maybe I think that might have been part of my reaction to Final Destination 3 at the time, that it felt like out of step with times and dated. But now it's like, I just think these movies are so fun that going back to this time, I had a fun time with this one. How about you? Did you like this one too?
I liked it. I don't like it as much as I did the first two.
I don't either, but I just I just remember having such a bad opinion of this one when I first saw it that when I watched it this time, I was like, no, this thing's totally fine.
It's fine. I think some of the deaths aren't quite as creative this time around.
Some of them, I think, are. Well, anyways, let's first get into the setup of it, though. Like, so this time it's a roller coaster accident. And it's actually, our lead is Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I did not, you know, at the time that this film came out, I didn't know who she was. So that wouldn't have registered. And so I just didn't remember that she was the lead. Did you know that?
No, not until you were like, hey, guess
who's
in this?
But you've seen it, the movie before, right?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, so
not something I remember.
Yeah.
And I mean, you figure, like, really, she didn't really, you know, make a name for herself for another 4 years. You know, when she was played Ramona in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, a movie I do not like, but I did fall in love with her.
Yes. I think she's great in this. Like, she's fine, you know, like it's an early role for her, you know, you can tell that, but, I think she has like, just got a natural talent and ability and she's probably always had it. And you can see that here, you know, I like this cast. I love the setup. I'm terrified of roller coasters. I have a weird history with roller coasters, too, where it's like I used to be really scared of them as a kid, and I came over that fear when I was a teenager and would go on anything. But now I'm like, anything above a Disney-level coaster, I'm kind of like, I don't know, man. How about you with roller coasters? Is this one of your fears?
No. I mean, I enjoy roller coasters quite a bit. But, yeah, this one definitely was like, you know, fuck, like, what if? Like, they're all great what-if situations.
Because it's like, even if you're not afraid of that thing, it is like a naturally thrilling, like, a roller coaster is like a naturally thrilling thing to begin with. But, again, and these movies are very good, like, with the tension building up to that, like, little things that play on you, like, there's one part where she looks up as they're in line and it looks like something's a little loose.
Yep.
I've had that before. Like, I've seen that before. Or like if you look at a coaster, like the metal coasters are supposed to sway a little bit.
Yes.
You know?
They like, need some give. Like physics. Like
yes, the it's physics. Science
of it is to, it's like you need that give because otherwise like you would probably die from the force.
Yes. But, you know, and I know that. I know, even if you know that on an intellectual level, like, there's primal fears, like, and it's just when I look at, like, it's, you know, shit, dude. Like, there's one. I have a six, you know, there's a Six Flags Great America near Chicago, and you know, their old wooden roller coaster. I've looked at that thing sometimes. I'm just like, things are like bolts are falling out of this thing and shit, right? Like, fuck, it's kind of scary. So, anyways, I think that like. As someone who's like afraid of roller coasters, that this opening really plays off the tension of that in a fun way. And then once it gets going, it's so much fun. Like, all the kills and the people flying off this fucking thing and hanging from it. Oh, and it gets like stuck upside down at one point. I think at the very end, it gets stuck upside down. She's like hanging from one of the bars and she falls. I think a really fun opening beginning. I love any movie that takes place at the very least partially in a theme park. Again, and then I just think, it does feel a little bit like they've just fell into a groove with the series, like where like it was almost too formulaic with this one. We're just like, all right, we're going through the motions.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, how do you feel about the rest? Like, how do you feel about the opening and then the rest? I feel like
I think the opening is still fun and elaborate and super entertaining to watch. I love, like, it's one of the things I like about, you know, the Saw movies, or like the scenes in the Saw movies where they kind of explain the puzzle. Where you see how the puzzle works and like how they get out, and like that's what I love about this, is like you kind of know where everything is going, and they give you a great bit of foreshadowing just before things happen to be like, all right, this is happening and this is going to cause this, which like, and it's just this great domino effect all the way through. up until, you know, she wakes up or dies in her dream to then wake up and realize, oh shit, can't get on this fucking thing. They go back to the, you know, that formula of the first one, though. It's like everybody got to get off the fucking roller coaster. They're the people that are saved. That's your cast right there.
Yeah.
It's not quite as interesting as this.
Yeah. And this time it's like, it's kind of a new, like, they're following the same idea of, oh, you have to follow signs, but they decide to introduce this, like, her camera is the magic now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's the same thing, but it's different. And so it feels kind of off. Like,
yeah, it's like not like, oh,
it's not the rules were before.
Yeah. It's like the signs aren't in the real world anymore. Now it's like, we're going to look this up and we're going to understand the history of it, but we're also going to change the rules now. And the rules are, you have this magical fatal frame camera. And
yes, it's like, yeah, it is like a fun thing, though. It's like, oh, so then what is like the clue in this image? And it's like, oh, well, that gun pointing to his head was literal, or, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's fun, but it's also, it just feels slightly off to me and a little cheaper. And it feels, yeah, it feels like a lazy, cheaper workaround to do like what they were doing in the first couple, like this time, like, oh, this is our gimmick, it's the camera. It's also crazy to think about. This is like 2006.
Yep.
And people are carrying around cameras still. Nobody cares. Like, everyone uses their phone, dude. Now, I mean, for the most part, right? Like,
oh yeah.
No one has a.
It is.
I don't know. Do you own a digital camera?
I mean, I probably have one in the house.
Yeah.
Not one that like we take out and use.
No, I used to. I guess I guess you could buy like a really nice one. Don't get me wrong. So don't no one like at me on fucking Twitter yelling at me about cameras. Like I all I meant is like it was common at this time to have a digital camera, you know, and
oh yeah, yeah, and, very much so.
And now it's just like very like much like most people, it's in their phone. Like, you know, an iPhone camera is not amazing, but it's pretty good.
But it's also better than the camera that they're carrying.
Yes, it's exactly.
Like, so.
But, yeah, I don't know. I like her in this. I liked this cast. I thought some of the kills were pretty inventive. I liked the tanning bed one. Even though it's like, I felt like, couldn't one of them just push the board out so they could
That was, to me, it's like, this is, like, you're just, I don't know. It seems like it could be fun.
I love how cooked their skin looked as it was going on. Like, it was like, oh, they're like roasting chickens.
They definitely did some great effects work with it. But it's like some of them are just like that one in particular is pretty dumb. Like, there's an easy way out of this for you guys. Like,
but it also did have the elaborate setup where like one thing knocks into another and that knocks the shelf off. And then the shelf just perfectly followed it. Like, I dig it, but I was just like, when I saw it fall into place, I'm like, yeah, can't they just reach through like that little hole then and push it? Like, instead of freaking out and dying? I don't know, but it's like, at some point, it's like, you can't overanalyze these movies. They're dumb fun.
Oh yeah, they're really goofy.
They're clever, but they're dumb fun.
Like the whole that there's the scene where the horse ends up taking her sister. Like, she gets something wrapped around her neck and she gets yanked away by this horse. And, like, it's just this goofy cliche scene where the guy grabs a sword like and chases after her to, like, hack it just before she was going to get impaled. It's a little too goofy at times, but it's also so much fun. Like, it's having fun with it. And it knows it's having fun with it, that it's infectious.
Yeah, I had a lot more fun with this than I remembered. So I'm gonna wrap this up, man. I'm gonna give this 3 stars.
Yep, that's where I'm at.
So next week we are going to do Avengers as well as our summer movie preview. But the week after that, if you're feel like it, Chris. We could do 4 and 5. I'm kind of on the fence.
I'm not opposed to it. I don't remember 4 and 5. I remember like one of them, I think we said like was a like a NASCAR race.
Yes.
I don't remember how the other one works, but
so here's my memory. I remember 4 being not great. And I also think that one might have been 3D. One of them I think was 3D. I could be wrong. I'll look into it. Yeah, but
sounds about right.
I remember then 5 being really fun, like really awesome with a really cool ending that we'll get into. I guess I'll do it, man. We can't, the reason I'm so like, should we do it or should we not? Is like, we got to watch these three for free and they're on Netflix.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We're at the track down the other two.
Yeah. It's like,
let's do it. Let's find a way. I'm sure we could find something. They gotta be.
All right. Yeah. Right? They gotta be out there. Yeah. We'll do it. We'll do 4 and 5, but that won't be next week. It'll be after our Avengers/summer movie preview episode. So a little bit of a cliffhanger here, you know, little season finale. We'll be back with the series premiere in a couple of weeks, so to speak.
Yeah.
I guess, shit, we ran over. I don't know if there's anything you want to say about the first two episodes of Game of Thrones. We're on the final season.
Yeah, we're coming up on the last 4 episodes, I think. There's only 6 for the season, right? I've enjoyed both of these immensely.
Me too. It's one of those things where it's like the people that kind of like could nitpick at this point, I'm just like, are you really a fan of this shit? Because
I don't know.
Episode 2 was just like, it was like this is for the fan. Like here's your goodbye to a bunch of characters for the fans.
Yeah, like
it felt natural. Like it was so well done.
I understand that people are like, oh well, shit needs to start happening. There's only so much, but honestly, there's not that much left to happen. Like there's really not.
And on top of that, like don't worry, it's coming. Like. You're not going to, like, when you rewatch the series 10 years from now, you're not going to feel these 2 episodes as, like, oh, come on, let's go. You're going to be like, no, these are nice, good, like, dude, I did not miss the action or the plot development at all in episode 2. I was living in every moment as it happened and loving it. I loved the knighting of Brienne.
Yep.
The knighting of Brienne was, like, probably one of my favorite moments out of these first 2 episodes. Like, I really love that. I really love how Jaime has reemerged once again as like a really interesting, complicated character.
Yeah,
like he's not good or bad. Like you could come down on him easily one way or another for so many of the horrible or good things he's done. But for me, I just look at him as like he's one of the most true to real life characters that there is because he's just not one thing, you know.
Right.
You could look at Jaime either way. You know, and in this episode they really, you know, kind of highlighted like the more, you know, the more commendable side of him. He's a man of honor in some sort.
And I think they're giving some depth to some other characters too, and like giving some conflict going into things that it's going to be like, hey, you know, Danny now knowing that John is technically, like, if you're gonna play the I have a claim to the throne, like his is more legitimate than hers at this point.
How
pissed off is she, like, really internally? Like right now, I guess she has to keep it together to, you know, because they need to survive first, but like is she willing to just step aside for that?
I love that they didn't let that moment play out. Like the episode ends before you really know her reaction to finding out that he's, you know, he's got a real claim to the throne, right? Like, because she's like, yeah, she just says you have a claim to the throne. The look in her face is like, oh fuck. But then like they get interrupted, don't they?
And it's the horn blares because the White Walkers have arrived, and
so it's like. Because I made the point to our friend Pete, who's on Perfectly Sane, maybe she was going to bend the knee to him. You don't know. Like, she could have just decided, she's in love with him. You know, she could have decided if he's the real, you know, I doubt it. But I'm just saying.
I did not get that feel, but yeah, so you don't know.
Either, but you get to see the beat end. I'm just saying.
Right. Like, it could have gone multiple ways. Like, you don't know because they didn't get to have that conversation.
Yeah, it could have surprised you with all
there's conflict there that wasn't there before. And it's very interesting to see how that plays. And you know, to see Theon come back and, like, you know, he's this despicable person through most of the series, and then, like,
you just, like, I fucking love him. Like, yeah. I just feel so bad for him. Like,
like when he
it's just how good the writing is.
Sansa, like, went and gave him a hug, and it's like, yes,
that
makes me feel good.
Yes,
like, and this is a show that most of the times you don't feel good.
Like, and it's just like Theon Greyjoy is a perfect example of how much better the writing is on Game of Thrones than most everything. Because again, like you said, he's a character that was so despicable, and then they put him through such of a ringer that by the end of it, you're just like, dude, no, man, this guy needs to, like, come back. Like, it's insane, dude. Like, I don't know. I think that people that, like, come down too hard on the series in any sort of way, like, you're like looking a gift horse in the mouth. I hated, I think it was season 5. I thought that was pretty weak, but shit, man. It's just been super awesome these last couple Sundays. It's been super hard. Like, I would binge watch the last 4, you know, right now, if you let me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been really great. And, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens in the last 4 episodes. So.
Yeah.
It's not too often that you come across a series that's like, you're like, oh, I need to see it. Like, it to me right now. Like, a lot of it's like, it's all right. I'll wait. Like, I'll wait till I can see them all together. But it's like, no, like, they've done such a great job in these first 2 of, like, getting you re-emotionally attached to everybody. And now they're going to turn around and rip all our hearts out, but it's going to be great.
I mean, I think in the last decade of television, it's really been, you know, the 2 kings are Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, it's always hard to imagine, like, what the next thing will be. There'll be another that's amazing. Sure, we're all obsessed with. But, like, right now, it just feels like, oh, man, it's like the end of an era. And it's so exciting. Like, you get to see how it finally ends. The shit they've been talking about since episode 1 is coming to fruition, you know. There's something else I wanted to touch on about this before we moved on. Fuck. I don't know. Game of Thrones, it's amazing. We'll be talking about it more, obviously. But, oh, no, predictions. That's the one last thing I want to touch on about Game of Thrones. Like, what's your prediction?
I think everybody in the crypt is fucked.
Okay. That's like, wasn't that like the women and children that he put in the crypt?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a real safe bet.
Yeah, I think they're all fucked. I think that I've heard people go, oh, they're not going to kill off any of, like, the main characters. Like, no,
absolutely.
I think they are. Like, I honestly, this would be maybe, like, the most unsatisfying ending, but I could see everybody dying and somehow Cersei living. Just like,
seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah. To, like, really fucking twist the knife in your back. Yeah. I'm
smarter than all you fuckers. I stayed out of that stupid undead war.
But just like, it's like the Red Wedding times 10, you know?
Oh, so. Yeah.
All right. So my original prediction going into the season was this, that no one would work their shit out. And so then everyone would die and the Night King gets the throne. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that is no longer my prediction. My new prediction is this. The next 2 episodes are going to be them fighting the Night King in Winterfell. And they will actually defeat the Night King. You know, a lot of people will die. Like, almost everybody will die. They'll defeat the Night King. And then leaving the last 2 episodes to be the battle for King's Landing.
Okay.
Between whoever's left. Maybe Tyrion's going back to his sister to beg for forgiveness and she fucking slaughters him. I don't know. But fucking, that's my prediction is, 2 episodes of Night King, they beat the Night King, and then the final game, like the end game, happens in King's Landing, and it's between Cersei and whoever's left.
I could see that happening.
But again, with all these predictions, we have to remember Game of Thrones, anything could happen. So I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? I know we're running really long, so I don't know if you wanted to touch on that TV show real quick.
No, we'll like if we have time next week, we'll touch on it, but it's just not super important. So
okay, yeah, I know I saw a couple other things that I could maybe recommend, but this just turned into a fun dive deep into Final Destination with a little Game of Thrones at the end. I think that's a good episode.
Yep.
All right, so we'll be back next week with Endgame and our picks for the summer, our top five for the summer.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Movie dudes.